everybody. Welcome back to Hot Shots. I'm Jedi, and with me always is Houdini and Deepaw. What's popping, boys?
What's going on, my guys?
How we doing, fellas? How we doing?
Doing all right. So I walked into a normal establishment that I probably haven't walked into in maybe a decade. Subway.
I'm sure you both know about it. I thought you were going to say Chuck E. Cheese and get hyped as heck.
I wish, but no.
Yeah, it's been a while for me too. It's probably been at least 10.
Yeah. Now you go to Jimmy John's, you go to Firehouse Subs. You know, there's so many different options that are just way better. But anyway, walk in there. And it was very, I saw something that really caught my eye that I was not a fan of. So for the past decade, they've had a commercial $5 foot long. They're throwing some new things at us, and now it's a $6 six inch. So now we're paying an extra dollar, and we're getting 6 inches less.
What the hell is
this
madness?
What's going on at Subway?
I don't think I've had Subway in 15 years. And I legitimately have a goal, never to have it again.
Yeah, but see, the thing is that it shouldn't have infuriated me, but it did. Because it was like, why is it $6 now for one, and why am I getting scammed out of 6 inches?
Yeah, and what was it? I mean, was it a combo meal, or was it just a sandwich? Like,
nope,
what are we talking about here, Jedi?
Nope, just a sandwich. Nope. $5 foot long, they preached to us for the past decade. You had that dude, whatever his name was, and...
Well, yeah, they don't talk about Jared anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't either.
Yeah, for good reason, for sure.
Talk about blowing a career. Like, dude did nothing and was a multimillionaire. All he had to do was keep eating Subway. But took it a little too far.
That's why I eat my 5 cold cut combos a day.
Also, too, they also made it out to be this big health thing. Subway is so unhealthy for you. That yeast in there, it is one of the best smells in the world when you walk in there and you smell the yeast of the bread, but not healthy.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never heard that before.
What? A good smell?
No, I've heard that. I've never heard. Oh man, dude, I can't get over that yeast smell in Subway, dude. Like,
you guys
smell
it?
I don't know if it's yeast. I think it's because I grew up playing baseball, travel baseball down in Florida, and that was just everybody's go-to thing. Like, you just got Subway on the way there. So I was so used to being like 7, 8, 9, 10 every Sunday going into Subway and getting like a turkey cheese sandwich, which was a $5 foot long too, might I add. Don't get that anymore, though. This is the old days. Jackson Holliday has been sent down to AAA after he hit... 0.59 his batting average in only 10 games, so not a great sample size there, but he did strike out almost half of the time. I'm not a fan of this move at all. I think it hurts Jackson Holliday's confidence a lot. I think that he was ready for the MLB. Look, he hit .304. He slugged almost .550, and his OPS was above 1,000 in AAA. That's the only bottom tier to the major leagues, and I just think, like, yes, he was in his own head, but 10 games, people, really? Like, I don't even think they really gave him a fair shot. And I understand that he did look really silly in a lot of these at-bats, and it really wasn't competitive. But the dude's 20 years old. Give him a chance to, like, settle his feet in the major leagues.
He struck out 18 of 34 plate appearances, so it's above 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Vegas was... really pissed because I know a lot of people that were just slamming his time struck out, and it was a lock every single day. I think Jackson Holliday got called up too soon, to be honest with you. Like, I'm trying to be nice here because he is 20. You know what I mean? So, and like, he flew up the minor league so fast, but he was clearly outmatched. He was clearly pressing, and you can't, like, at the end of the day, the Major League Baseball organizations are a business. It's bad for business right now. It really is. It's bad for business right now. You cannot continue to have him in that starting nine when you have other guys in the minors too that are absolutely mashing. I do think it's the perfect time to send him down. Maybe he starts figuring it out down in AAA again. They bring him back up. And that's his way of kind of riding a roller coaster in his rookie season. But I 100% think it was time to send him down.
Yeah, I agree with you, Dino. I think they should have sent him down, and it was warranted too. I mean, he did just look overmatched. Jedi, you mentioned about, you know, his confidence. I think this is the right thing to do for his confidence, honestly. He's absolutely raked at every level that he's played at. And this, I believe, was his first time, his first at-bats above double-A when he was, you know, in spring training and his triple-A, which he absolutely, you know, raked. So I don't fault the O's for bringing him up, and I can't fault him for sending him down when it was bad, man. He just was, he looked fooled. And when you have a farm system as talented as they do, maybe they, you know, if it was a little more barren, maybe they stick with him a little bit longer. But whenever you have another stud you can call up, I can't blame him when you're in the middle of a race right here.
Oh, it was bad. I'm not disagreeing with that at all. But I do think, like, look, you send him down. I just told you the numbers that he had in AAA. He goes and does that again. What's the next move? You have to have him in the MLB to get his feet wet and make him comfortable.
I would bring him right back up.
Exactly. That's my problem with it, is because if he goes down and he starts having an OPS again above 1,000, it's like, what are we really doing here? Because it's clearly not the talent. He needs to get comfortable. And I don't think 10 games was a fair chance.
But I think if the division wasn't so tight so early, maybe they kind of stick it out. But whenever you have a gaping black hole in your lineup every single time he comes off the bat, not even doing productive outs, he's striking out 51% of the time. Like, that's not productive outs in the MLB.
I get what you're saying, Jedi. Like, I really do. What's the best way to hit major league hitting, to see major league hitting, like, or see major league pitching? I get that. But he was a bona fide out. Every time he was stepping in the box,
yeah,
he looked uncomfortable. I think a lot of it is due to the media, the videos that go viral of him getting called up, and unrealistic expectations. A lot of people were kind of pinning Jackson Holliday as the next Ken Griffey Jr. And you can't make that comparison. So do I think he's going to be better than his dad? I really don't know, but he's undersized, he is a second baseman, and he's 20 years old. There's plenty of time for him to figure it out. Let's not forget Judge's rookie year, like his real, like when he first got called up, wasn't great either. So, you know, it may take an extra year. That's okay.
I saw a tweet when he got demoted too, and I didn't have a chance to look up the stats behind it, but they mentioned, you know, bona fide superstars who got brought up, really, really struggled, got sent down, and then came up pretty quickly and obviously became superstars. I know Mike Trout was one of them, and Derek Jeter was one of them, that this guy mentioned. I didn't have a chance to look up how bad they started, but, you know, you're right. You don't know what his career is going to be, but he's got all the talent in the world.
Yeah, and there's also even comparable stats with players who had their same first 10 games and had very similar stats to what Jackson Holliday has had now. Ken Griffey Jr., Willie Mays, and Cal Ripken Jr., all three Hall of Famers, all some of the greatest that ever played. I think that the media is doing a really bad job, and honestly should be ashamed of itself a little bit with like the headlines that people are throwing on Twitter saying he's washed, he's cooked. It's not fair. 10 games, people. No. I mean, he's 20 years old. It's 10 games. Like, I'm not worried about Jackson Holliday at all. I think that he's going to be a stud, and I think his brother is going to even be even better, Ethan Holliday, but he doesn't get drafted probably until I think it's next year. But I don't know. If you're an Orioles fan, I'm not panicking.
Not at all.
My confidence in this guy has not decreased at all. It's only, you know what? He needs to get comfortable. He's really young and he's moving fast. The NFL draft concluded and there were some surprise picks the first day. The most notable we'll talk about right now. Michael Penix Jr. gets drafted by the Atlanta Falcons after they signed Kirk Cousins to a mega deal this offseason. The Falcons GM said that they couldn't let Penix Jr. talent be passed up because they know they won't be drafting that high in future drafts in the coming years. The thought is that Penix Jr. Can learn from Kirk Cousins. Thoughts on this? First reactions.
I think it's the stupidest thing I've ever heard from anybody ever. They did. I will tell you, like, they can say all they want, we won't be drafting this high. They did nothing to improve their team in 2024 or 2025, for that matter, in the first round, having the 8th overall pick. You had an opportunity to go get Roma Dunze, who literally would have added another massive weapon to Cousins' artillery that he already has there. Their defense gives up like 40 points a game. You could have taken any of the first defender off the board should have gone to Atlanta. I'm actually in shock. The amount of D tackles, it was a cornerback deep class too. You could have gotten anybody that you wanted on the defensive side of the football to improve an already dog shit defense. They didn't do it. So if I'm Cousins' camp, I have a lot of questions too. Not only to mention, Penix is 23. He's about to be 24 in May. How long is he going to learn from him? 2, maybe 3 years? He can be 27 years old. I don't understand the pick. It's a head scratcher, and no matter what explanation they give, it makes no sense.
Yeah, and I mean, you're exactly right, Houdini, and they kept their, you know, I don't want to call him a franchise quarterback, but they're paying him like a franchise quarterback, completely in the dark. He had no idea this was coming. And when you take a look at Kirk Cousins' contract, it's really front-loaded. The first 2 years, basically all that guaranteed money goes to him. So they're basically setting this up for, you know, getting Kirk out the door right away. With what the GM said, an extremely bold statement for an organization that really hasn't done much since they choked away that Super Bowl. You're exactly right on the pass rush too, Houdini. They had one of the worst pass rush defenses for the past 4 or 5 years. I believe they haven't had anybody with over 10 sacks since 2016. That's horrible in today's NFL when you're throwing 35, 40 times a game. So really bold for a guy that really only popped off for 1 year to, you know, kind of alter your franchise. It's a very, very bold statement from them.
I think the highlight for this for me was just seeing all the Falcon fans all over social media, just like crying, screaming, whatever you want to call it. It was entertaining. I do feel bad, but I did get some enjoyment and laughter out of it. So I appreciate the pick in a sense, because it made me laugh. Feel really bad, though. I mean, jeez.
There's always one franchise that makes a pick where you're like, oh my God, right? Thank God it wasn't mine this year.
It's usually the Raiders, too.
Yeah, or the Raiders. But but it just blows my mind. They blow their next four picks on defensive guys. You had anyone you wanted.
Yeah.
Now, if you're Michael Penix Jr., are you upset that the Falcons drafted you knowing that Kirk Cousins is there? To where he's probably not going to go anywhere and he's clearly going to be the starter there unless he gets injured?
The famous quote in the NFL is the best job in the NFL is a backup quarterback. So no, I don't think that he's going to be upset about this at all. You know, with his injury risk, it's 2 more years probably of him not playing and 2 more years closer to his next contract.
Yeah, I mean, Deepaw's point on Cousins' contract is important. I do think this is a 2-year gig for Cousins, and then he's getting bought out. So I do think it's Penix's team in the future. You get an opportunity to learn from a guy that's been in the league for, what, 15 years now, 12 years now? Like, it's a good opportunity for
him. Yeah, not quite 15, but definitely over 10 for sure.
You know, and look, he's getting paid top 10 money.
Yeah.
I got no problem with this if I'm Penix.
Continuing on with the draft, I saw this pick and it got me thinking. Cooper DeJean was drafted by the Philadelphia Eagles, and a lot of people like this pick. The dude is from South Dakota, and when I saw this, I was like, how many athletes are actually from South Dakota? So it got me thinking, how many people born in South Dakota have played in the NFL? Do you want to guess?
27. I do want to guess.
All right, Deepaw.
Oh, I'm not going to get a higher or lower. I think it's lower. I'm going to say... NFL's been around. I'm going to say 7.
34 since 1922. And it's actually not the lowest, which I was like, what? So Montana. Guess the state now with the least amount of NFL players of all time.
Montana.
I did not think about it. And I understood it after I saw the state.
Maine.
Burning hot. It's Vermont at 10.
Yeah. Ooh, or like Rhode Island too. Yeah.
I almost went with Delaware.
That's a good one.
Yeah, Vermont, which I thought was really weird. And Vermont actually holds the record for the least amount of NFL players, the least amount of games played, and no Hall of Famers in the NFL.
All right, Deepaw. So Jedi's going to give us control here to go over our winners and losers of the 2024 NFL draft. We're going to go 1 for 1, 5 through 1, and then we'll handle our losers next. My number 5 for winners, the Los Angeles Chargers. Jimmy Harbaugh needs to make a splash. He's got to protect Herbert. He takes Joe Alt, which in my opinion is the best offensive tackle in the draft from Notre Dame. He takes Ladd McConkey as a wide receiver from UGA to give Herbert another weapon. He gets his reunion with linebacker Junior Colson, who I think is, for the value that they got for him, is unbelievable. I think this is a really good draft for the Chargers to at least protect Herbert and to continue building that franchise under Harbaugh's direction.
Yeah, a very Harbaugh-esque draft. I love it as well. I love that Ladd McConkey pick. That's going to be a great pick. He's going to dominate the slot. He'll be like a prime Hunter Renfrow. He's going to dominate the slot. Number five, it might be, you know, it's very top-heavy, and it was two sexy picks in the first round, but it's got to be the Chicago Bears. They came out of that draft needing a franchise quarterback. They got the best one available. Regardless of what Jedi or anybody else thinks about him off the field, he's a baller on the field. And then Rome Odunze, going up there with Marvin Harrison Jr. as probably the 1A, 1B of the draft. I know some people had him above Harrison. I didn't quite see that, but you go out of that draft needing offense, and they got it in boatloads. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, it's my number four. And look, it all hinges on Caleb Williams. It all hinges on Caleb. You know, for a team that had five picks total in the draft, and they used one on a punter, it's hard to even put them in the consideration that they won this draft at all. But when you have two picks in the top 10 and it is a slam dunk, obviously yeah. Caleb Williams was the clear cut one, but then to get a Dunze at nine, I think it was, or was it eight? I think mm-hmm. it was nine.
Eight or nine, yeah.
Yeah, which obviously the Falcons passed on.
It was nine because, yeah, Falcons went panicked at eight. Yeah.
Yeah, so they had to have been jumping for joy in that war room. So, yeah, I'm definitely taking the Bears with the four. And the punter might be good. You never know.
He won't be McAfee good, but, yeah, he could be good. Number four, we're sticking in the NFC North, the hometown Detroit Lions. And I'm doing it. You know, I know I watched a lot of the draft. I didn't watch every pick, but I'm going because of what they needed. They needed cornerback depth. Cam Sutton just got cut off the squad. He was a prized free agent from a couple years ago. They needed cornerback depth. And in the first two picks, they took Terrion Arnold and they took Ennis Rakestraw. So they immediately addressed their biggest weakness on a team that didn't have much weaknesses. They should have been in the Super Bowl last year. They really screwed the pooch in the third and fourth quarter there. So they shored up what they needed. I hope they just continue that same trajectory they're going on.
I'm slowly digging the Detroit Lions since Hard Knocks 2 years ago.
Yeah.
My number three, the Philadelphia Eagles. Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo is
stud.
Many people have said, and look, like him playing in the MAC kind of gets, you know, like a bad rap, but he literally pound for pound might be the best cornerback in the draft. So I think they hit a home run there. Cooper DeJean, whatever you want to call him. There was a lot of people that were kind of upset because they didn't take Kool-Aid McKinstry, which tit for tat, tomato, tomato. It is what it is. You got a cornerback that will probably start in a couple of years. And then they take Jeremiah Trotter Jr., a Philly legend. So, you know, I think they have a good draft. Offensive side of the football, I don't think they needed much help outside the play calling issues that they've had. I think they've handled that. The defensive side of the ball was the question mark, and they get two corners that they desperately needed.
It's coming up. Slay's coming up for a contract coming up. Yeah, they won't re-sign him. Yep.
Yeah, they needed to rebuild that secondary, and they did.
Yeah, I like it, and you'll see them on the list coming up here shortly too. Number three for me. You know, doing a little bit of research on this, I don't think I saw them listed much anywhere. The Kansas City Chiefs. Once again, it's kind of one of those, you know, rich get richer scenarios. When you're drafting later in the draft, typically you're drafting for a specific need. You don't need to, you know, rebuild the whole franchise. Rashee Rice, nobody knows what's going to be happening with him. Probably going to get a decent suspension coming out of the year. So they go and they get Xavier Worthy, an absolute burner. Not saying he's going to be the next Tyreek Hill. I am not saying that at all. But he's just as fast as Tyreek Hill and just as explosive. They also shored up the offensive line. They moved up and got the tackle from BYU as well and took another two linemen later in the draft too. So you're protecting your franchise quarterback and you're giving him another weapon. Home run hitter right there.
You can never sleep on anything that the Chiefs do.
And they just signed, the GM, Andy Reid, and somebody else for another 3 or 4 years too, extension. So like they're going to be around for a while.
Yeah. My number two, some might say it's a homer pick. I don't care. The Washington Commanders had eight picks in the first three rounds, and they utilized it perfectly. You needed a franchise quarterback. Regardless of if it pans out or not, there are teams that want to draft quarterbacks, and then there's teams that need to draft quarterbacks. The Commanders needed to draft a quarterback, and they get theirs in Jaden Daniels. Has full potential to be rookie of the year. Full potential. I think him and Adonze both, in my, and obviously Caleb Williams, those three in my mind stick out as potential rookie of the years. If Jaden Daniels can put on a little weight and stay healthy, he's probably the dual threat future quarterback of the Washington Commanders for years to come. Not only to mention, with Cliff Kingsbury's offense, should spread it out a little bit. He should have a fun time throwing the football. Jerzan Newton, defensive tackle. You know, there's a lot of questions with Daron Payne, Jonathan Allen. Well, you just added a staple there after getting rid of Montez Sweat and Chase Young. He kind of fills that gap. Pound for pound, Nick Saban says Mikey Sarin, still cornerback from Michigan, is the best slot corner in the draft. So obviously we needed some help in the slot. And then they take a tight end, which I'm not even going to go into much detail about it, because I really feel like the tight end position in football has become replaceable at any point. I just feel like rookies come up nonstop. Veterans find their second legs. So I really feel like the tight end position now is more about just, you know, having certain packages in at the right time, blocking tight ends versus receiving tight ends. Kelce is a unicorn. Yeah. I think the Commanders had a home run draft, and I'm excited. They're sucking me in, and I'll probably be depressed after week four or five, but they definitely have sucked me in.
Yeah, they killed that draft, and you touched about it with Jaden Daniels. That is my only concern with him, is just taking all of those hits throughout an entire year. He does need to put on some weight, and I hope you're right. That's a great point with Cliff Kingsbury offense. Hopefully that air raid is getting the ball out quick and he's not holding on to the ball. Great draft. I believe, I don't know your GM's name, great first draft from him. Like, that was perfect. Perfect job for him.
Adam Peters?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Number two for me, we're sticking in the same division. It's the Birds. It's the Philadelphia Eagles. It was a Howie Roseman masterclass. The dude has been crushing drafts for the past couple years. Needed cornerback depth. You touched on it earlier, Dino. Went and got two of the best four, in my opinion, right off the bat. So a weakness on the team immediately becomes a strength on a team that really underachieved last year. What I think kind of put him over the edge for me, though, was he did all of that, and they have 9 draft picks next year, too. So it's not like, you know, next year, like they, you know, mortgage this year or 2 years to really kind of make some moves this year. They're set up for another great draft for a GM who's been crushing the drafts.
It's a cause of concern in the NFC East. Yeah. I will tell
you. I mean, yeah, go ahead.
Because I don't think the Cowboys and Giants, like, yes, the Giants getting Neighbors was big, but they don't have a quarterback that can kind of, you know, like Daniel Jones is not going to be the answer. So. Yeah. And the Cowboys, I don't know what they've done in the draft the last 3 or 4 years.
Not much.
But, yeah, that's a cause of concern. My number one is the Arizona Cardinals. And they're my number one for a couple reasons. 8 picks in the first 4 rounds. They needed defense. Darius Robinson. They needed Kyler help. My Lord, did they get it. Trey Benson, running back from Florida State.
Stud.
Kind of forced to carry that offense once Travis went down. Look no further than another potential rookie of the year in Marvin Harrison Jr. Kyler Murray needs all the help he can get. Another guy that you're looking at that is kind of in that crossroads of his career right now. Had a couple years that he was, oh my God, this is the guy. Dealt with some injuries. Now here you go. He's at his crossroads. They get the best receiver in the draft. And when I say best, and what's crazy is if you look at the comparison between him and his father, it's not even close, because he is a large human being. So this is like I don't even know how tall Randy Moss was, but he's like Randy Moss type size. Randy Moss is what, 6'2", 6'3"?
Yeah, he's like 6'3", 6'4". Randy was pretty tall. Yeah.
Marvin Harrison Jr. is what, 6'3"?
6'3",
yeah. So, and his dad was only like 5'10", 5'11", maybe 6 foot.
Barely 6 foot with the helmet on. And yeah, so he's just as good as his dad, just as fast and 3 or 4 inches taller.
Yeah. So I think it was a home run for the Cardinals. Now, I don't think they have the head coach that they need. I think that dude's a clown ever since that midseason
hard audio knock. Clip.
Oh, yeah. Man, yeah, dude, I can't deal with it.
I like it. You know, you had a homer pick with yours. And I don't even say homer, because the Commanders had a great draft. And I think even if I wasn't a Steelers fan, I would have the Steelers in this top 5. I think with my loyalty, it jumps them up because they absolutely crushed it. Another masterclass from Omar Khan. They needed offensive line help. If you watched any Pittsburgh Steelers games, it was a porous offensive line. It was getting blown up everywhere. They had issues at center. They had issues at right or left tackle. They had issues all over the place. So Khan stays put, doesn't move up, doesn't move back, gets the player they wanted. Troy Faletanu, tackle from Washington, is an absolute stud. A lot of pundits had him within the top 10 players in the draft on their big board, and the Steelers got him at 20. They also got an absolute dog from West Virginia, Zach Frazier, center. This dude is an absolute savage. He broke his leg last year in the middle of a game and walked off the field on it. That just kind of shows you the grit that he has. So you instantly get your line helped out right there. And I think one of the best picks of the draft, Roman Wilson, wide receiver from Michigan, the number one beater in man coverage in college football last year. And in the NFL, a lot of these defenses are going blitz heavy, and that means you're manning up on somebody. And when you can get a slot receiver who's the best man beater in his class, that is an absolute home run. They also pulled, you may hear about this dude, you may not. Peyton Wilson is a linebacker from NC State. 400 tackles in 4 years. He had a horrible medical because I believe he had has a degenerative disease where he doesn't have any ACLs. The dude just doesn't have any ACLs. So he's really looking as a one contract player, but he runs a 4.4. He's a linebacker. He's an absolute stud. That could be one of the steals of the draft if he stays healthy. Could also be a huge question mark for him.
I'm confused on why that would be an issue.
Bone on bone. There's no ligament in there to support those bones from hitting each other and jacking.
So instead of like tearing an ACL, he's just going to break a leg.
Yeah, basically. And good, it's like career ending, you know, yeah, like okay. type of stuff.
Like
yeah.
shatter.
There's nothing to go in there and repair. Yeah, yes. It's like, yeah, the bones are broken.
Yeah. The dude from Washington, can you repeat his name?
Faletanu?
Yeah, he might be the largest human I've ever seen. So when you bring in two new quarterbacks in Russ and Fields, you got to protect those guys. Moving on to the losers. I'm just going to give you both of my losers right off the bat.
Let's do it.
My number two is the Cleveland Browns. It was almost as if they thought that they were good enough last year to continue to build off that without having to move up and take anybody else that they wanted. They do get some D-tackle help with Michael Hall Jr. from Ohio State. But outside of that, I don't really see anyone that jumps off their draft class that excites me. In my opinion, Joe Flacco came in and managed football games really well, which led to them winning football games. With Deshaun Watson, I want to get him more weapons. They had probably opportunities to move up. I know they don't have first-round picks because they traded it all for Deshaun Watson. Yep. So they're trying to do the best that they can. But when you look at the draft, it was almost a non-factor throughout the entire draft. I think this is a miss from Cleveland. I think they could have done something, packaged their two and their three to maybe move up in the second round or even late first and get a dynamic playmaker right away.
Playmaker, yep.
And they just didn't do it. My number one, the Atlanta Falcons. Regardless what they did the rest of their draft, passing on Adonze to take Michael Penix Jr. to me might be one of the most questionable picks I've seen in the last decade from an NFL team. So I'm not really a big fan of the Penix pick. I do think Penix is going to be a successful quarterback in the NFL, but when you shell out $120 million to a quarterback, your first round pick should be an asset to help him. It should not be his successor.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, I'll lead off with number one because it's the Falcons as well. That move doesn't help you at all, and it creates discontent between your franchise quarterback in Kirk Cousins and now you're, you know, the next one, the anointed one. I think Kirk is a professional, and I think he's going to handle it well once they get in the building. I think he knows it's his job, but there will always kind of be that, you know, resentment in the back of your head, like what that pick could have been, especially if Rome starts balling out or another offensive stud starts balling out. Oh yeah, and you're taking a quarterback who really just balled out for 1 year. Yeah, he had a couple good highlight plays at Indiana, but with an injury history and balled out in the Pac-12, who played no defense all year. So like, is he talented? Yeah. I just don't understand why at eight you do that. I know there was a run on quarterbacks, but man, you're sending the wrong messages. Last point about him too. I feel like then the locker room kind of gets split up too. You're going to have guys that think Penix should start. You're going to have guys that think Kirk should start. And naturally you're going to create that divide between the team. Number two, the San Francisco 49ers, in my opinion, had a bad draft. There were rumors all week. Is Debo going to get traded? Is Brandon Ayuk going to get traded? So there's clearly some discontent. Ayuk, you know, I think refuted a report that said he wanted to be traded. So there's a lot of discontent coming out of there. And what do? They take Ricky Pearsall, a wide receiver from Florida. So there's something off in that room. They're typically not a throw it all over the place type of a ball club. They want to run the football with McCaffrey and set up play action. But they're not looking to, you know, have Brock Purdy be the centerpiece of this team. So I think that was a little bit of a shaky pick. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Debo or I get traded here before the start of the season.
In my opinion, the wide receiver from Texas, Mitchell, ranked higher, blew down draft boards for some false report. You know, it came out. I don't know who was snapping about it. It might have been someone from the Colts organization. It might have been the Colts owner that I think was snapping.
Jim Irsay, what a scumbag.
No, it wasn't him then. It wasn't him. Might have been their GM. I don't know. But there was something going on there where he dropped down draft boards on the day of the draft. And I forget what the story was. But I'm taking a 6'2", 205 wide receiver from Texas any day of the week. Huge miss by the Niners. So that is our winner and losers of the 2024 NFL Draft.
All right. So last thing that we're going to talk about here is the NBA playoffs. So Philly fans booing and chanting F Embiid. You boys want to explain what's going on here? So Joel Embiid said it was disappointing to see that Knicks fans took over the 76ers arena in their game 4 loss. And the fans were not too happy about that or the way that the team has been performing in the playoffs so far. What's your take on this?
So it's unfortunate because Embiid probably has torn ligaments in his right knee. He's playing through that. He was just diagnosed with Bell's palsy. The guy literally can't blink or use the left side of his face. I think it's the left side of his face. So like you can see when he blinks with his right eye, his left eye doesn't blink. Like, legitimately think about playing a professional sport and not being able to blink for like 30 minutes. You know I mean, like, at some point, your eye's going to start burning. He has to be able to, his depth perception has to be a, like,
probably getting sweat in your eye.
Sweat in your eye. Like, think about all the X factors that go into actually having one eye not working. I have zero problem with how Embiid has handled this whole thing. It is disappointing from Philly fans, but I'm not surprised. Because when we ranked the top 5 worst fans in the world, Philly's on that list. They're booing Jalen Brunson. They're booing Dante DiVincenzo. They're booing Josh Hart because they were Villanova guys. And the Villanova guys came out and said they didn't really embrace us as a Philly school when we were there, so why are we surprised? But Philly wants to have a parade for them when they win the national title, but then boom, because they're on the Knicks and they're about to bounce the Sixers in 5. I just don't want to hear this shit from Philly fans. I really don't. To, you know, I'm going to steal D-Paul's line here. Sour grapes, dude. Kick rocks.
Yeah, like, and I'll just touch a little bit on that because I understand their frustration where it's coming from. Embiid is a great talent and, you know, he's one of a kind, but it hasn't resulted in anything. That Kawhi Leonard shot in the Eastern Conference Finals completely changed the trajectory of the Philadelphia 76ers franchise. They haven't been right since that fateful shot. So do I get it? Yeah, but am I surprised? No, not at all. It's Philly.
Well, we'll make sure to keep you up to date with the NBA playoffs. So that'll do it all for us here at Hot Shots. Make sure to subscribe and follow to all of our channels at Hot Shots Podcast. And until then, we'll talk to you next time.